Good evening. In this episode of News Wrap, we move from the Comrades Marathon to Warren Buffett, Joburg's troubles to Tongaat Hulett, and a lot more in between. First, though, let's recap on the latest news headlines. EFF Deputy President Floyd Shivambu has resigned from the political party he co-founded with its president Julius Malema way back in 2013. Malema and Shivambu are the co-accused in the VBS scandal. Shivambu was central to the EFF's negotiating stance ahead of the creation of South Africa's post-election government. The party made his appointment as finance minister a precondition to a coalition with the ANC, something that the other party refused to accept. Malema said at a press conference today that Shivambu's resignation and subsequent joining of Jacob Zuma's MK party surprised him. The South African Health Professionals Collaboration, representing over 25,000 healthcare workers, will not sign President Cyril Ramaphosa's health compact. It says the compact is nothing more than an attempt to lock in support for the controversial NHI Act. The organization is demanding urgent engagement with the president to develop health reforms that genuinely benefit patients and the country. Standard Bank Group reported 22 billion rand in headline earnings and an 18.5% return on equity for the first half of 2024. CEO Sim Tshabalala attributed the strong performance to franchise growth, digital adoption, and strategic capital allocation. An 8% higher interim dividend of 744 cents a share has been declared. The company's share price is 6% higher year to date, capitalizing the business at 372 billion rand. Iron ore prices hit their lowest level since 2022 as global supply continues to outpace demand, with China's steel production falling a further 9% in the past month. Iron ore futures prices are now below $94 a ton, down from over $143 in January. The share price of JSE-listed Kumba Iron Ore fell 7% in the past week, taking its fall so far this year to 40%. That values the business as worth 118 billion rand. The Western Cape's expanded unemployment rate dropped to 27.3% in the second quarter. That's 15 percentage points below the national average and 12 percentage points less than that of Gauteng, which is the next best performing province. The Western Cape also has the lowest narrow unemployment rate at 22.2%. And on the global front, US inflation dropped to 2.9% in July, the lowest since March 2021, and below the market's expected 3%. This strengthens the case for a 0.25% Federal Reserve rate cut in September. The latest figures suggest the Fed's efforts to curb inflation are working. Columbia University's president Munesh Shafik resigned amid protests over the Gaza conflict and accusations of anti-Semitism. She became the third Ivy League leader to step down. The Egyptian-born economist follows counterparts at Harvard and UPenn. Shafik cited ongoing turmoil and divergent views within the community for her decision. In BizNews' best read story of the moment, the Comrades Marathon faces a major scandal as runners clash with the board over alleged industrial-scale corruption. The dismissal of race manager Anne Ashworth, who had exposed board members' misuse of funds, triggered calls to oust two board members at a special general meeting being held in Pietermaritzburg this evening. I spoke to insider and 10 times Comrades finisher, Stuart Mann.
Essentially, you've got a Comrades board, and they're supposed to be the custodians of this great event, looking after it, you know, for the history and the traditions, as well as for the runners, current and future. Unfortunately, all evidence points to the fact that there are at least four board members who are corrupt and working in their own self-interest against the interests of the race. In some cases, there's deliberate sabotage. In some cases, corruption. In some cases, it's just incompetence and ineptitude. And really what's happening now is that they've been found out, and they are trying to cling on to power, and doing absolutely everything, you know, against the interests of the race, the running community, and making some, you know, really, really dubious decisions, trying to hang on to their board seats.
And what's the running community doing about it?
So there's been a special general meeting called. So there were two big catalysts that happened. The one was Anne Ashworth came in as race and operations manager, this Discord race manager for short, after Rowan James resigned after the 2023 event, which was full of controversy. By all accounts, and the running community had a consensus, she did an absolutely fantastic job in, you know, elevating the performance and the race day experience for runners. And later in June, she was essentially fired. So much to the surprise of everyone, you know, suddenly you've got someone who's doing a great job. There's consensus. The sponsors agreed as well. Fantastic. You know, as a race manager, you're trying to keep the runners happy. You're trying to keep the sponsors happy. If they're both very, very happy, your job should be secure. Unfortunately for Ashworth, that wasn't the case. And in just around the same time, what happened was that one of the board members, essentially a racist WhatsApp message was leaked. That also then erupted in a social media storm. The Comrades board, they decided not to suspend their board member for the racist message, and according to the constitution of the Comrades Marathon Association, if 25 members can call a special general meeting, and that's exactly what happened.
Still in the KZN Midlands, a long battle between DA run Mgeni municipality and the ANC controlled Msunduzi is coming to a head. Here's Mgeni Mayor Chris Pappas.
So at the moment, what we're doing, both Mgeni and Msunduzi, is illegal. We are just making up our own rules to the detriment of the residents and the businesses of that area. We have got a second, what would you call it, tool up our sleeve, but it is what we want to call the last resort, is that there's an organized group in Msunduzi that wanted to take that municipality to court because they believe, and I'm in agreement with them, that they are not fulfilling the conditions of their NERSA license. In other words, the electricity distribution network and their service has become so bad in Msunduzi that NERSA, we believe, can actually take their license away and let someone else distribute the electricity, for example, Eskom. We would then join as a co-applicant in that. We can't take them directly to court without following an intergovernmental dispute process, which we have started. But to join as a co-applicant in that case would then fast-track what we're trying to do, and that is insulate the residents of Hilton from the maladministration and the poor governance that's taking place in Msunduzi, leading to the deaths. At the moment, Alec, there's a power outage in Hilton that started at last night. The first update that we got was this morning, and the update is we haven't got stores. So be prepared to wait, because we haven't got stores in place. Now, that's bizarre. We our service providers, our departments don't let that happen. The only time that would happen if it's major, you know, sort of substation type equipment that you need. And even then, we make sure that we have contingencies in place. So we borrow from another municipality and give it back to them. So there's not these huge waits. But what kind of a response is that? Sorry, we don't have space. And now you must wait and we can't tell you when.
If I was living in Hilton, I'd be asking you why I have to pay you rates and pay them electricity, and if they aren't fulfilling their job, why don't you take it away from them? Certainly, as there is no contract, as you've explained. So why are you being so nice?
Because let me show you these things here. This This is a big library of local government law, which is highly overregulated. And for us to be able to be less nice, in other words, take them to court or to get an interdict against them, we have to follow the intergovernmental dispute process. So we've decided to follow the route where we engage with Treasury and the Department of Cooperative Governance on different issues. So the one is that this is a financial issue because of the Msunduzi is generating an income. And the other is a service delivery issue in terms of the delivery of services, and that falls into two different departments. So once that is exhausted, which it, we've got to that point now where we believe we've tried everything, we've been nice, we've listened to their lousy excuses. We are now at a point where we've actually got confirmation from Treasury and from COPTA that they've received our intention to dispute. And they are, first step is a mediation. So they'll call us in for a mediation. Thereafter, we will then go to court.
In a week where much of the news is on the political side, Johannesburg's Mayor Kabelo Gwamanda resigned after 15 turbulent months amid growing public anger over political gridlock and collapsing public services. His exit was welcomed by the Johannesburg Crisis Alliance, and it opens the way for ANC nominee Dado Morero as the new mayor, assured apparently through the support from Herman Mashaba's Action SA. But not so fast. It's no longer certain that Action SA will be playing ball. Here's what Mashaba told my colleague Chris Stain this morning.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, when the ANC approached us, because of the instability of working with the EFF alone, sometimes they come out with sometimes ridiculous demands and so forth. So having us was actually guaranteeing the residents. For us, the first point of call was to make sure that we can stabilize this this municipality. We can't just sit back and be in opposition when we have the numbers to save the municipality. And we made it clear to the ANC why we wanted the speaker's position and the legislature so that we can hold them accountable. I said, guys, the only thing that can actually collapse this government is if any one of us wants to cover corruption, whether from ANC or from Action SA or whatever party. That's why it was important for us to hold the legislature. Why they are now scared all of a sudden for us to hold the legislature, it is up to ANC to explain. But the one thing they must understand that if we are not going to take the legislature, because we won't be able to hold them accountable, we don't want to be part of allowing corruption to happen in the city of Johannesburg. So through the legislature, we know we can directly and officially hold them accountable. If they don't want that, then that's fine. There's nothing we can do. One thing for sure, I know that the voters of Johannesburg are going to punish them even further than what they've done in the previous elections.
That's pretty emphatic, isn't it? So unless there's a reverse in the ANC's approach, Joburg residents could have quite a long time before witnessing a turnaround. DA Councillor Martin Williams, who used to be the editor at the Citizen newspaper, summed up his views in another interview with my colleague Chris this week.
There definitely won't be a miracle. It'll probably get worse, I'm sorry to say. But we ward councillors in the front line will be doing our best to help our residents. But the big decisions about where the money's going and how things are done, the reckless spending of money and the waste and corruption, that's not going to stop. That is not going to stop under Dada Marrero and the EFF and Action SA and that crew. It's not going to stop. There's absolutely no way Action SA can put a spoke in that wheel. It just, Mashaba couldn't do it for more than 3 years. He couldn't do that. It's not going to happen. So our best shot is to be a very good opposition, look after our residents as best we can, and build our support base further. In 2026, we don't have to get more than 50%, but if we can get more than the ANC, we can have more of a command, and which is not impossible at all, not by a long way. We're so close. If we can have the majority, the major say in what happens in Joburg, that's when Joburg will start to be turned around. It's not today, not Friday, not next month, not next year. Until there's another vote where the DA can overtake the ANC, not necessarily more than 50%, but have that commanding role and actually use that DA difference of getting things done.
Before we move on to our business stories, here are two follow-ups from last week. First, in the UIM leader Neil De Beers Sunday afternoon chat with Chris, he addressed the divorce between the Freedom Front Plus and the DA, referencing an interview on CakeNet, which an out-of-character, losing his cool Corné Mulder had.
It was very un-Dr. Mulder, the interview that I saw, because I know him quite well. I have sat with him, I have spoken with him, and obviously in the multi-party charter, I have dealt with him. He is most probably the longest-serving member of parliament in this country and a very astute politician. I see him rarely lose his temper. I see that statesman very rarely not become uncalm, if that's a word. I saw it here. I think what you saw in that interview was that the Freedom Front, don't forget, plus, is getting up and now saying, no, the continued rhetoric that was even spewed at the multi-party charter level, where we all sat and also got handful of it, I can say, was the fact of the big brother syndrome. Maybe in this case, the big sister syndrome. Of continually, indeed, saying, but we're the biggest, we're the largest, we are the largest opposition, you are the minority, small. Every minister is doing what they should do, but now inter-politics is at play. The Freedom Front Plus is getting up and saying, no, in Oudtshoorn, you did this, so we are going to do that. And that had a ramification of suddenly Dr. Mulder, who's leading the Freedom Front Plus in this province, in this province, getting up and saying, you're not going to have the title of the perfect governance within province and municipalities anymore. We are going to show you in Oudtshoorn that with our new partnership of the ANC, we are going to be the alternative for future government. That's caused a major rift. That's made not just Oudtshoorn collapse, but places like Langebach and the rest of the places where they are in so-called coalitions. Chris, ruptions are coming, and I think the Freedom Front Plus is going to exercise their freedom.
Chris also picked up on the White River military training camp story with Manabela Chauke, who's chief executive of the Private Security Industry Regulation Authority. Apparently, the NPA is not going to charge those 95 Libyans, but they will be deported.
I think the public must know that the only people that can give military training in South Africa is the South African Defence Force that is created in terms of Section 199 of our Constitution. They are the only people that can give military training. The rest of the other people can give military-style training, something like that. But the military-style training is actually something that is forbidden because you're not even supposed to give military training. So unless you say, I'm giving tactical training or I'm giving advanced tactical training, whatever name you want to call it, except using military-style training, it is something that South Africans must know and must be able to see. And maybe just as a last warning for South Africans who want to engage in this type of activities, they must know that should you be found guilty, you can even have everything forfeited to the state, including the farm that you're using. If you go and look at the regulation of Foreign Military Assistance Act, it makes provision for the forfeiture of everything that is used for this type of activities.
The sad tale of KwaZulu-Natal's one-time corporate giant Tongaat Hulett grinds on. This time after an opportunistic attempt by an organization called Vision, headed by Robert Gumede, was turned down by shareholders of the insolvent company. Earlier today, I spoke to Dave Willem. He's a chartered accountant and a former financial director of a major South African bank. And he represents one of three large shareholding groups in Tongaat Hulett.
And because everyone is kicking the can down the road, for good reason if you're a professional or a super helper, and for also a good reason if you happen to be a bank, it's just getting into a bigger and bigger problem. So my question really is, what's going to break the logjam? What is going to end all of this?
Well, we have reached out and we will continue to reach out to the banks first and foremost because they hold the key. They hold the primary rights. We understand the banks, in a way, wanted someone else to come in and deal with all the commercial reality that is involved in something like this rather than themselves. They're lenders. They don't really want to be owners. And they don't want to be having to make hard decisions that are politically difficult in three countries that are very, very complex politics right now. So I guess for them, it was very convenient to have somebody who could take that away from them. But we urge the banks to listen to all the stakeholders, to listen to those that have got an interest in trying to save this company and all the people, the history, the long history of the company, and to try and figure out a solution that is going to actually be, there's no win-win. I think the idea of a win-win just doesn't exist anymore, but there's a least bad outcome. And if the least bad outcome protects jobs, sustains the businesses, gives them a space to rebuild themselves, then that's as close to a win as I could hope for, and I'd be excited. I just don't see that happening right now. It's just too many lawyers and court cases happening.
We close off this week with insights from our partners at Bloomberg on reasons behind the sale by Warren Buffett of 500 million Apple shares. It was an investment of 3 billion rand that Berkshire Hathaway made back in 2017, 7 years ago, that netted them 30 billion rand, one of the very best investments ever made by Warren Buffett. Matthew Palazzola was Wall Street's number one ranked insurance analyst when he was at Merrill Lynch. He's now at Bloomberg Intelligence, and these are his views.
They kind of telegraphed a little bit that they were probably going to sell more at their annual meeting in May. Buffett had warned about tax rates going up potentially in the future and maybe taking some gains off the table. Tim Cook was actually sitting there in the audience. It was kind of funny that they had sold, I think it was like 10 to 13% of their holdings at that time, and they got questions on it. And it just seemed body language-wise that they would be selling a little more. So I think tax rates, Buffett's been a little weary on exposure to China for some companies, so I think those two played a big role.
Apple underperformed the S&P 500 tremendously in the first quarter. It was one of its worst quarters relative to the index. Probably like the fourth or fifth worst since the dot-com bubble burst. But then it bottomed in April and has been up close to 30% since then. And so the S&P 500 in that span has only been up about 4%. So you were saying you didn't think even just the rally that we've seen was as much of a factor either as far as why they trimmed their stake.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, Warren Buffett's not out there trying to time the market one way or another. He looks at these stock investments as if he's, you know, buying the company. So he also said at the annual meeting he expected Apple to be their biggest holding at the end of this year. It still is. So, I mean, that stock was about 40% of their portfolio before this move. So I'm not surprised to see him take some concentration off.
How much cash do they have at Berkshire Hathaway today? And so any ideas what they might do with it?
Always a tough one, Paul. It's $278 billion, which I thought was a mistake when I first saw it because they were at like less than 200 before. The sale of the Apple stock brought in a lot of cash. Higher interest rates have taken a lot of pressure off them holding cash.
Yep.
I was calculating that just a simple after-tax return on the cash would help their earnings by at least 5% next year, right? So just holding it will be okay. They bought a big stake in Chubb. That would be an interesting mega deal. Not really predicting that would happen, but just seeing that. I mean, I think the next deal Buffett does is probably something we don't even really understand what it is, like, you know, makes unique parts for some materials or something like that.
It's interesting too, because at a certain point, their holding in Apple was so big that it took up basically half of its portfolio. So in your kind of view, does it make sense to make a move like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if anyone wants to have one stock make up, right, you know, half of their portfolio. He had said that he would love to have owned the whole company at one point or something. Also keep in mind, Bank of America was also their second biggest holding. They've been selling a lot of that in the third quarter. So I do think he's really looking at concentration.
I saw some reporting, I think it was in the Times, about Bill Gates and Warren Buffett relationship maybe not as tight as before. Any thoughts there?
So what has been happening is Buffett's part of the giving pledge where he gives away a bunch of his wealth over time. He was giving a lot of his money annually to the Bill Gates Foundation. What happened, I don't remember when it was, I think it was probably the end of last year, he had announced that when he passes away, that his children are going to inherit the shares in a foundation to be used for charity. I think before that, the Gates Foundation was, I don't know if it was official, but was at least thought was going to get some of that. I don't know about the relationship between the two of them. I just know that that was the case. And I think, you know, he's given tens of billions to the Gates Foundation over time anyway.
Until next week, I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.